He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
This is Media Watch. I'm Colin Peacock. Well, what a week for the media, but not in a good way. Unprecedented cuts to TV news and the loss of hundreds of journalist jobs at both our big TV broadcasters.
There is no way that News Hub is going to be saved, so the news division is closing down.
Confirmation today that the midday and tonight news bulletins will go. They and Fair Go will disappear from our screens come mid-May.
This week, many people have said you could have seen it coming, but it seems that few people plan for it, including the government.
All right, so your ideas are secret, but you have got ideas.
Definitely.
So on Media Watch this week, we look back at all that and ask, what happens next?
After making a splash with his address to the UN General Assembly yesterday, Winston Peters says he didn't need to raise the topic. Excuse me.
Do you mean to get, you want some water?
No.
You can do this now.
Veto powers with the United Nations chief today. The Foreign Affairs Minister...
That was the AM show host Melissa Chan-Green stepping into the breach after newsreader Nikki Styris suffered a frog in the throat at just the wrong time on the AM show last Wednesday morning. Now, happily, she was fine moments later.
And sorry about the coughing fit earlier on. Not sure what caused that, but thank you for taking over, Mel.
No worries. Are you okay?
And she went on to read plenty more news and weather like a pro. But that wasn't the only thing that didn't quite go to plan in that show on Wednesday. After the next ad break, viewers saw the co-host Lloyd Burr on his knees fixing the furniture. Yes, a good time. I don't want to stop at
all. We just noticed that potentially we might have put one of the panels on the flat pack we were building earlier from IKEA on the wrong way. Lloyd is fixing it slash ruining it.
And then the previously spluttering Nikki Styris had to take the place of a panel guest no-show, Paula Bennett. So tough morning on the AM show, and the choice of Queen's Don't Stop Me Now could have been interpreted as a plea to the bosses, because less than 3 hours later, they were at an all-staff meeting for News Hub, at which the offshore executives from the owners Warner Brothers Discovery confirmed the complete closure of News Hub by mid-year.
The owners of TV3 have confirmed the network's news operations will shut down in July. Kim Baker-Wilson joins us now from outside 3's Auckland headquarters. Kia ora, Kim, what can you tell us?
Staff were given that news a little over an hour ago. There was a long, very long and somber line walking up the road from here, the headquarters, to a nearby building where staff were told there is no way that News Hub is going to be saved. So the news division is closing down.
That was TVNZ's Midday News on Wednesday from outside News Hub's headquarters in Eden Terrace in Auckland. And just the day before, the roles were reversed when News Hub's Simon Shepherd was outside TVNZ's building reporting the coming closure of TVNZ's Midday News and more.
Fair Go, the TV show, will go from our screens after 47 years of battling for the consumer. In its place, a solution, says the Fair Go team, four new long-form digital reporting roles covering consumer and current affairs content, some of it under the Fair Go banner. But you have to remember that these four jobs saved are just part of the 68 that were targeted in the restructure, 35 of those coming from News and Current Affairs, and some of those will come with the confirmation today that the midday and tonight news bulletins will go. They and Fair Go will disappear from our screens come mid-May.
And the next day, Wednesday, TVNZ also axed the flagship current affairs show Sunday on the same day that the axe fell at News Hub.
Decades of TV journalism is ending with News Hub and TVNZ's current affairs flagship Sunday going off air. Reporters at both networks, though, still fighting to reverse today's decisions.
And we'll hear more about that fight when we talk to the man leading that rearguard action, a former cabinet minister who could have played a part in changing the course of media history himself. That's later on. But by mid-year, as things stand, it is the end of the line for all news bulletins on TV other than TVNZ's One News at 6. Though tellingly, the news-like shows Breakfast and 7 Sharp will survive at TVNZ because they accommodate sponsored content outside the ad breaks as well, and therefore pull in more money from the advertisers. TV Channel 3 will be entirely news-free, unless the urgings of News Hub's Patrick Gower on Wednesday come to pass.
We know that people are talking about giving News Hub a lifeline. These people deserve a lifeline. Kiwis deserve News Hub to keep going. And the key thing now is that those people who are going to look to do these deals get on and get them done and save some of these people and save some news for Kiwis.
Well, there he was talking about reports that other media companies were talking to Warner Brothers Discovery about filling the News Hub at 6 News void, or at least part of it. But how could these deals be done, and who would want to actually do them? Well, reports and rumours of lifelines that might be thrown to News Hub and its journalists came from the possibility of a sale to another media company, or other media companies making news in video, but on a much reduced budget for Warner Brothers Discovery. And among the names mentioned in media dispatches recently, NZME, owner of the Herald and half the country's radio stations, which has radio and video studios to call on. But the Herald's Media Insider column didn't have much to say about that, though it did say on Tuesday that News Hub was set to receive a lifeline, and the Media Insider Shane Curry said he understood Stuff was among the leading contenders. Now, Stuff itself reported on Wednesday that Stuff itself was understood to be a likely contender, but a spokesperson for Stuff declined to comment to Stuff's reporter on whether Stuff had been in talks with Warner Brothers Discovery or not. Another name that cropped up was Newsroom, which isn't a broadcaster, but does do daily topical podcasts such as The Detail, in partnership with RNZ, which was also mentioned as a potential partner for Warner Brothers Discovery in some news reports. However, RNZ is the only one to categorically say it's not in the frame for this, and possibly that's just as well, considering that it recently, and quietly, killed off the video version of its only daily news show with pictures, Checkpoint. And there is also Sky TV, which has production facilities galore and a free-to-air channel in Sky Open, which is currently running News Hub News at 5:30 each weekday and might need a replacement. But Sky has only said it was an interesting idea, or words to that effect. After confirming the closure of News Hub, finally, last Wednesday, Warner Brothers Discovery local boss Glenn Kine told reporters this.
The process we've been running externally has been different from this confirmation process. And as I said, we've made very clear that we would listen to everyone internally and externally. At this point, there is no deal.
And Glenn Kine went on to say the company's door has always been open to all internal and external feedback and ideas. But it seems anyone opening that door clearly isn't willing to do it in daylight or tell the rest of the media about it. Now, if there is to be any kind of News Hub Lite lifeline for the journalists and the viewers of Three, a key question is, well, what is it that Warner Brothers Discovery is prepared to pay for a news programme? And presumably, the answer is not much, given that they say they had no choice but to carve the cost of News Hub, tens of millions of dollars a year, from its bottom line. In which case, is it really worth any major media company's while to commit to making news on the cheap for Warner Brothers Discovery and in a hurry because the 5th of July, when the last News Hub bulletin screen, is coming up fast? Well, on Morning Report on Friday, longtime TV3 news boss Mark Jennings said any substitute service would have another problem.
You've got to remember, you're up against a sophisticated TVNZ product, so viewers will have an immediate comparison. Probably that comparison won't be that favourable for Warner Brothers, I'd suspect.
But TVNZ News, of course, has its own problems right now. After the cuts they confirmed this week, they said, we are proposing to establish a new long-form team within our news operation, which could continue to bring important current affairs and consumer affairs stories to Aotearoa in a different way on our digital platforms. So how will that be done, and how will that change the news for viewers and the online audience? Well, this week we asked to speak to TVNZ's news chief Phil O'Sullivan about that, but he was yet another TV executive not keen to talk about all the upheaval with Media Watch at this stage. One executive who did agree to talk to us, though, is News Hub's news boss, Richard Sutherland, who was appointed as interim senior director of news at News Hub back in January.
The last couple of weeks have been coming for quite some time for the wider news industry in this country. I think that the so-called legacy news operations have almost done too good a job of keeping the lights on and papering over the cracks over the last few years. And we just got to a point, I think, as an industry where we couldn't paper over the cracks any longer and something had to give. And I think that that's what you're seeing across the whole sector at the moment. But when you look at audience behaviours and the fall off in revenue, particularly in the advertising market, then it doesn't surprise me that we've got to where we've got to.
Well, let's take those two things in isolation. So first of all, the audience. You say doing too good a job at papering over the cracks, but if they were, wouldn't the audiences have been higher and higher enough to get the ads? And yeah, you wouldn't have both broadcasters closing down news shows?
There is still a very large audience for linear free-to-air television. It's certainly by no means as big as it once was, simply because people have other things to do, other options available to them. And, you know, the old cliche is that you're not in a war with the other media, you're in a war with people for their attention. It's not so much the audience that's changed so much as the dynamics of the advertising market that has really changed over the last sort of 10 to 15 years. And the digital advertising and the big two main players in that space, Facebook and Google, are eating everybody's lunch.
Annual advertising stats for 2023 came out coincidentally this very week. They're $3.36 billion across the whole of the media industry. That's a drop of $30 million down from last year, or from the previous year, 2022. So that's that in itself isn't a huge drop. The TV advertising revenue slice of that, 2022 it was $517 million going to television advertising. Last year, 443. That's a big drop for just one year, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, what the TV industry has found is that it can't cut its costs fast enough to meet the fall off in the advertising income.
The digital-only revenue that you mentioned there, which is the stuff that mostly goes to Google and Facebook, that rose by $88 million over 2023.
And it's not going to the so-called traditional broadcasters. So that's the conundrum that the industry has found itself in.
So if you say, you know, this has been coming for a number of years and there isn't enough of a plan to deal with this. I mean, it seems weird that you have, you know, six of your colleagues led by Michael Mora trying to form a plan in a number of days to create something like an 18-month or two-year horizon for keeping News Hub news on the screen or something like it until everything goes online only. You know, these are the things that should be planned for over years, isn't it, right across the television business?
Every media company that I've either worked for or have observed over the last few years has been involved in trying to innovate and change and get to a more sustainable level. However, like I say, the revenue was just collapsing far faster than anyone ever anticipated. And that's the point that WBD has made consistently, is that the market just fell away so fast that we just were unable to keep up with it. It annoys me, actually, Colin, when I hear people say, oh, the media hasn't innovated enough. Well, every organisation that I've worked with or looked at has changed. We've done a lot of innovation. It's pretty lazy politics to just say, well, you need to innovate. In the same way that it's also lazy politics to say, well, the government should just come in and bail everyone out. I think that New Zealand Incorporated needs to have a big conversation about what it wants to do with the media and how it wants it funded.
Yeah, but if we had, say, at the time the TVNZ-RNZ merger was proposed, and you would have been at RNZ through a lot of that as head of news here, but then opposition, now the government, called it a solution looking for a problem. So they didn't seem to think there was a crisis coming. New Zealand On Air was interviewed on Morning Report on Thursday. They were saying, look, we don't know if we have a role in that. They didn't have a plan for it either. I mean, given that, what is it, $250 million or more of public money goes in, shouldn't there be a better plan for what to do with all this public money if we can't get the basics of news and guarantee those on the air across, you know, a couple of channels?
It's not the government's role to be the only operator of free and sustainable news. But I don't think as a country we want it to leave it to state-owned or state-funded organisations to provide the bulk of news. What we need is bipartisan support and industry support for everyone getting together. What is it we want to achieve? How do we do it in a sustainable and profitable way, in such a way that we have diversity of voice, good regional geographic coverage of the country, that the big issues are looked after and covered really, really well in a sustainable way? And I think that if I look back over the last decade or so, I think as an industry, we have not done enough to work together. Successive governments have not done enough to help the industry get to a place where it is sustainable and profitable and still able to tell really good stories.
Well, there's reports and rumours about the possibility of other media companies trying to provide some sort of news hub replacement service and negotiating with Warner Brothers Discovery. Now, I won't get you to comment directly on that because that'll be what your immediate superiors, I guess, will be doing. But if the company couldn't afford tens of millions to run a proper news operation, they'll be trying to do something if it came to pass with a fraction of that sum. Do you think New Zealanders would want a sort of cut price, sort of fairly basic sort of news service, you know, possibly online, when they're, you know, for years they have been used to, you know, properly produced 6 p.m. bulletin on more than one channel?
Well, the audience will decide that, Colin. There is a segment of the audience that appreciates a very highly polished, highly produced, well-curated news bulletin every night, and there's large numbers of people who no longer see that as part of their media diet. And the trick is to continue providing various options so that people can get what they want when they want it. It's not really for me to say what a possible replacement for NewsHub might look like. I'm well away from those negotiations, and it's up to greater minds than mine to make that work. The market will decide, and the audience numbers will decide, whether it's something that people want to consume. It's not too late, but what it requires is a willingness for all the main parties to actually get in the room together and work out what it is that we need to do as an industry. I think one of the big obstacles to everyone getting in a room and working together has been that for the past few years, you know, the industry's been like so many rats in a sack, fighting with each other, chasing a smaller and smaller amount of ad dollars. And what we do need to do is get together and work out, you know, how do we get ourselves collectively out of the sack?
But they did get together, didn't they, shortly before the announcements of these closures. In behind closed doors, there was a meeting of chief executives, and Warner Brothers Discovery was part of that, and there was the possibility of a shared sort of news service. And TVNZ in the end said no, and that went nowhere. And that was just before the announcements from NewsHub and TVNZ of the current closures that we're now seeing come to pass. So, yeah, there doesn't seem to be that instinct at all.
No, but, you know, a lot has changed in the last couple of months, and I would like to think that eventually we'll get to a point where we can actually have honest and productive conversations about what we can do to help each other, as well as maintaining a degree of competition, but also realising that if we just keep fighting with each other, we're not going to have a sustainable industry. And I would point out that the government owns, you know, two media organisations with big news operations, and they are a big player in this country. And it is the owner, as the shareholder, it could put in place boards, or God forbid, the same board with a mandate to tell them to work together with the wider industry for the greater good. The events of the last few months will hopefully have sharpened a lot of people's minds on the importance of doing that.
If there was to be a plan, a joint venture or something that could keep NewsHub or a 6 p.m. bulletin going on TV Channel 3 and others, would you want to be a part of that?
Oh, look, I haven't really given that any thought, Colin. At the moment, I'm very focused on getting to July 5 and continuing to deliver the best possible product we can right up to and including that day. There has been some commentary from people that, oh, well, you know, we only cover these stories about the media job losses because all we care about is talking about ourselves. But what is happening here is fundamental and possibly existential changes in the media industry. If we reach a stage where the media scene here withers away to nothing, well, there'll be no one to tell the stories of the 300 freezing workers who lost their jobs, or why the meat industry is in turmoil and what's been done about it. And, you know, to put it bluntly, Colin, the media uncovers a lot of shady stuff in this country. And the fear of media coverage prevents people in positions of power and authority at all levels of the state from doing a lot of shady stuff. So what happens if there are fewer journalists to do that? So, yes, it is important to document the ructions in the New Zealand media scene, just like we do in other parts of the country.
That was Richard Sutherland, the Interim Senior Director of News at NewsHub, the complete closure of which was confirmed by the owners, Warner Brothers Discovery, last Wednesday. Even if a cheap and not necessarily cheerful news replacement does end up filling the 6 p.m. void at 3, from mid-year, TV viewers, linear and on demand, will still be missing out on stuff like this.
We've spoken to broken former All Blacks.
Sorry, guys, can we just have a...
Yep.
A break, please.
Devastated families.
It's going to go to help others.
We've travelled to the world's largest sports brain bank in Boston, USA. And now we're here in Waimate, South Canterbury. Another casualty of CTE.
That was the story of a family in Heartland, New Zealand, mourning the death of Billy Guyton, a top rugby player who died way too young after suffering the effects of repeated head injuries. Now, that screened 7 days ago on TVNZ's Sunday show, which is set to vanish next month. And those who stayed through that compelling story on Sunday and the ad breaks last weekend would have heard this.
This is the story of a saga that began nearly 25 years ago.
You were not mad for me.
Dealing with post office has been more difficult than dealing with the mafia.
It's like fighting a steamroller.
A group of sub-postmasters from all over the UK fought to expose one of the widest miscarriages of justice in British legal history.
That's Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, The Real Story, a documentary by the British commercial network ITV, all about a long-running miscarriage of justice in the UK. Now, that was a story told by ITV also as a four-part drama that also ran on TVNZ1 in two parts on the preceding Sundays at that same time. And it's no accident that this piece of current affairs followed on from Sunday, pulling the TVNZ audience with it. And the same goes for this local special, which is running this weekend, which TVNZ trailed ahead to last Sunday after that.
There was no escape. These guys had free rein. And this was the start of something that went on for years.
The Lost Boys of Dilworth, Sunday on One and TVNZ+.
Now, if you're one of those who never watches linear TV anymore, as many claim, all those true stories are available anytime online for free on TVNZ's on-demand platform as well. But just like the news, local drama and documentary like that is at risk as well, and even reality shows that are designed to maximise advertising. The day the axe fell at News Hub and at TVNZ, New Zealand's screen producers guild SPADA said that while the newsroom cuts have dominated media coverage to date, it is actually the whole production sector being impacted. The Screen Producers Guild SPADA is also asking the government to exempt screen funding agencies like New Zealand On Air from the across-the-board 7.5% public spending cuts and force the international streaming platforms to support local production. And this week, SPADA called for swift and decisive action from the government on this, but are they holding their breath? When confronted by reporters for a response to the current TV news crisis, the Broadcasting Minister Melissa Lee has repeatedly said she's preparing policy in a paper to take to Cabinet. And later, on RNZ's Checkpoint, persistent and pointed questions from Lisa Owen yielded few further clues.
How, though, Minister? When you say you're providing support for modernisation and innovation, how are you doing that?
Well, that is part of the Cabinet paper, and I'm not prepared to talk about that. We are going through the Cabinet process, and I'm not commenting on it.
All right, so your ideas are secret, but you have got ideas.
Definitely.
On News Talk ZB shortly before that, the Drive host Heather Duplessy-Allen told Melissa Lee she was being weird and shady, and the next morning, Mike Hosking had some more blunt language for the Minister.
Bollocks. You think a country at the bottom of the world with 5 million people are going to do what Canada and Australia and Europe can't do?
I'm hoping that what the Select Committee brings back is actually a pathway forward.
That's buzz talk, Melissa. It doesn't mean anything.
And in the ZB update headlines shortly after...
News Talk ZB headlines.
The Broadcasting Minister's accused of having no idea what she's doing.
And while that was harsh, it is literally true to say that the media and the public have no idea what the government plan for the media might be. Media policy is conspicuous by its absence in the government's recently released quarterly action plan, so it seems they're not in a hurry. Meanwhile, this week, our two biggest TV news broadcasters ran out of time. After his unenlightening on-air interview with the Minister, Melissa Lee, on Thursday morning, Mike Hosking's ZB listeners told him that she reminded them of ministers in the last government.
Broadcasting Minister sounds like a Labour MP. Melissa Lee is out of her depth in her current role. Classic MP spin. Mike, sadly, that interview reminded me of the frustrations of Labour ministers.
And coincidentally, one of those ministers in that last government was one of the few people who did speak out about the TV news crisis while it was unfolding this past week, Michael Wood. And that's because he was representing journalists for the E2 union as its negotiation specialist. Now, the union is taking legal action against TVNZ, claiming that it failed to fully abide by the conditions of its employment agreement with its journalists. And on their behalf, Michael Wood has insisted that TVNZ cutting news and current affairs right now won't solve its problems. But as a cabinet minister in the Labour-led government from 2017 until late last year, could they have done more to stave off that current crisis? Well, Michael, we've heard you speak this week about taking legal action against TVNZ or, you know, involving the Employment Relations Authority. This isn't actually going to change the picture, isn't it, or bring back any jobs or programs, is it?
Well, that does remain to be seen, and it will depend on the outcome of that legal process, which, of course, we can't prejudge at this point. There is a collective agreement between TVNZ and its staff, and it has very clear processes around what should happen if TVNZ wants to move forward and make changes. That requires them to be involved throughout the process and for the company to try and reach agreement with them. And our very strong view is that that hasn't happened. So we'll just have to wait and see what the outcome is. The most frustrating parts of this process have been when we've been having meetings with TVNZ management. Staff have said, look, 5 years ago we came to you and said we want to do these things with our shows to make sure they have a sustainable future, to make sure that they have a strong online platform that we can monetize. And the organisation, frankly, has not demonstrated strategy and leadership around those things. There's this fallacy out there that people aren't interested in the stuff. It's not, it can't be commercially successful. People don't watch it. These are still shows that are very, very popular. Cancelling them will reduce costs, but based on TVNZ's own information that they've provided, it will reduce revenue by more.
Hmm. Well, it's been really difficult to get any media company executives or even journalists at the two companies affected by this round of cuts to talk to us, even off the record, because this is all about news for the public and part of democracy. Are you concerned about the kind of lack of transparency that information wasn't able to come out while these things were going on?
Look, obviously there is a bit of a delicate dance which has to happen when media companies themselves are making these decisions and media need to report on that. And, you know, that is often very difficult for the staff and the management to navigate. So I have some sympathy. But these aren't just individual employment issues. This is a public policy issue. This is about whether we have a functioning and vibrant fourth estate. And so there does need to be public scrutiny, you know, without getting into the details of the specific consultation that's happening with staff.
Well, you're a former politician, I mean, till very recently a Member of Parliament and a Cabinet Minister in the government. Is that partly the fault of the government you were part of? Things could have been really different. You were planning a public media entity that would have taken away TVNZ's or some of TVNZ's commercial requirements. You know, it would have been a public service entity and not a commercial first entity. Your government walked away from that.
What you've just identified is one of the core things that we've got to deal with here in terms of TVNZ. In terms of its statutory form, it is neither one thing nor the other. It has a commercial imperative. It also has some other obligations in terms of public good. And I think much clearer direction from government that our publicly owned broadcaster has a public good function, and that news and current affairs should be at the heart of that, is something that we should be much clearer about. So yes, you can always say that should have been done over the last couple of years. We've just got to now look forward and say, well, we've got the situation we have now. Let's deal with it. We can't shunt it down the road. I don't want a TVNZ with a strong digital platform that's just full of lifestyle shows and reality television. I want it to have a strong news and current affairs focus. But you won't have that if you remove that capacity before you make the shift. You know, if this gets kicked out for 6 months, a year, 2 years, we will lose even more capacity and so much institutional knowledge in the sector that it will become increasingly difficult to come back from.
I mean, apart from the union, the media doesn't seem to have any more a strong and active organisation representing its mutual interests, right? There is the Media Freedom Committee, but legislation that affects the media goes through without even a kind of submission. And that's something some of the editorial leaders have recognised, but they're kind of fighting fires in their own organisations. Is that, would it have made a difference if we'd had a stronger collective media body?
You know, in recent years, it's been a bit of a struggle for survival. And sometimes when that happens, organisations turn inwards, just kind of look after the basics and try and get through. But actually, it's needed more than ever. That is a time for government to step up. And no one's asking government to do everything. Government isn't going to run most of these companies or be operationally involved. But for our country, having a vibrant and functional news media with vibrant and functional news and current affairs is so important that we do need their leadership at this time. And certainly E2 Union will be there to participate in that.
So given that government does put more than $250 million a year into New Zealand On Air, RNZ, Whakaata Māori, and a range of media organisations and outlets as well as content, do you think all that needs to be rethought now? Like if you say we've got a Crown-owned company that can't put on news apart from a 6pm bulletin, even question marks about Shortland Street, one of its most popular and enduring local programmes, you know, if we're tipping that much public money into the media and not even getting that back from a Crown-owned commercial broadcaster, does it all need to be rethought what this money is for?
Well, clearly, given the state of crisis, everything needs to be looked at. You know, we have a public broadcaster and we have institutions like New Zealand On Air explicitly because we recognise that there is some, you know, public good in broadcasting that you don't get if you just leave it to the commercial system.
Well, we have New Zealand On Air because former governments 30, 35 years ago did not want the same organisation capturing all funder-provider split, all that of the politics of the time, that you know, other organisations should be able to get the public money to do things that might be in the public interest. If commercial broadcasting is suffering a market failure, does all that need to be rethought?
If you want quality news and current affairs that keeps people informed, that is something where you will need public funding to support that. And we have had that for a long time. The most successful models around the world, the ABC, the BBC, massively trusted organisations that are critical to the democracies of those countries. So getting the mix right, making sure that you have a plurality of voices is important, and making sure that we have a sustainable platform as we deal with change in the coming period and we don't lurch from crisis to crisis is going to be really important as well.
And just finally, Michael, what do you make of some of the media commentators this week saying, oh, you know, there's public service cuts going on all over the place and other commercial businesses in trouble in this economy. There's a lot of media self-obsession going on right now just because it's them this week that's losing their jobs. I know that, you know, you've been taken to task on air about the petition that E2's been running in the Save Our Stories campaign, you know, not only garnering a few thousand signatures. You know, do you think maybe there's a point there that the media focus on this doesn't actually mirror the public concern all that much?
No, that's not my observation of it. You know, there's been huge public support actually for the Save Our Stories campaign. We've had over 15,000 people sign the signature, and the numbers of emails that the staff have received. Yeah, people saying, you know, back in 1996, the Fair Go team, you know, backed me up on this issue and it changed my life. It's been absolutely huge, the support that we receive from the community. It's always a challenging moment where the media have to cover issues that relate to themselves. I think that generally that is done with some care. They've sought to get views from all the different sides of the discussion. But if the other side doesn't come and talk, it makes it a little more difficult. So I think they've tried to manage it as well as they can. And the thing I'll say about this is if you think about the TVNZ folks, they've been dealing with this, but at the same time, they've been doing their jobs. You know, week in, week out, the news shows, Youth News, Sunday, Fair Go, have continued to produce quality journalism for New Zealanders. So the main focus of these folks has been on continuing to do their jobs. But it's perfectly reasonable that they also speak up for the value of news and current affairs in our democracy. And that's what we as a union support them to do.
That was Michael Wood, the negotiation specialist for the main journalist union, E2, and formerly a minister in the previous Labour-led government. In addition to a lack of clarity from the government, plunging ad revenue and rising costs, another of the news media's problems hit the headlines this week: a further fall in public trust, at least according to the latest annual survey of more than 1,000 New Zealanders from the Centre for Journalism, Media and Democracy at the Auckland University of Technology. Over the past 5 years, that survey has recorded the level of trust in news falling every year. Now, some of the media's critics seized on that this week as evidence that the journalists at TVNZ and News Hub have only themselves to blame for their audiences turning off or turning away from their news. And News Hub's Patrick Gower hit back at them on Thursday.
We've got a trust problem. We need to address it and explain things that we're doing. I'm not going to sit here and listen to sort of people like that say that kind of thing after I've slayed my bloody guts out alongside my colleagues, 25 years in my case, putting damn good news out there. So while we've got a trust problem, we need to address it and explain things that we're doing properly. When it comes to the sort of Facebook keyboard warriors, I ain't got no time for the mic. I'm about the 250 people who lost a job yesterday and actually the millions of other Kiwis that I know that trust me and trust my colleague.
I also spoke about other aspects of that on Midweek Media Watch that same night on Nights with Emile Donovan, when we also responded to listeners' questions about truth and trust and the media, and also the cuts, closures and job losses that had been confirmed that day by both our big TV news operations, TVNZ and News Hub. If you missed it, Midweek Media Watch is available on the Media Watch page of the RNZ website, our section of the RNZ app, or it's available for free wherever you get your podcasts. And there's also a special bonus episode from the previous day with Hayden Donnell discussing reactions to the news from TVNZ last Tuesday. Well, this Wednesday, AUT's Centre for Journalism, Media and Democracy held a special forum to talk all that out.
Our work speaks for itself, it's just not enough
anymore. No, we have to tell people why it's good, how do we do it, and why can you trust us? We have to prove that we earn the trust of the public, for sure. And I know it's not my turn, but I'm very
excited. You have your turn, but it's fine.
One quick thing. Yep. You said,
Media Watch's Hayden Donnell was there, and afterwards he sat down with one current editor, who's in charge of the newspaper that came top for trust in that survey, and one former one, and he asked them if they took the tumbling trust figures to heart, and if so, how should journalists respond?
And when you spend 30-odd years in a career, and that's what people think of you, I think it is a bit distressing.
You can hear that next weekend here on Media Watch. We'll be back with more on the media in Midweek Media Watch next Wednesday after 9:30 on Nights with Emile Donovan, and then back again at the same time next weekend here on RNZ National.